You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are continuing our conversation with Dr. Bierman today on day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. Looking forward to that chat in just a moment. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul by visiting csp.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman, author of Day 7 for Rest, Work, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. He also does something else, too. What else is it that you do? Oh, yeah, you teach at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis.
Just that little thing.
Yeah.
That's pretty important, too.
I think it is. I enjoy it.
So we get to talk about Day 7, and today we're moving into, this is episode 4 in this series. Yep. Because there happen to be 7 chapters in this book.
There are that
brilliant
many chapters, yeah.
Was that on purpose?
It kind of worked out then.
That's nice when things work out.
7, I guess, yeah.
It's a nice number.
It is. It's
like 7. It's a good number. So today we get to talk about leisure. I mean, I should be very chill about talking about leisure, right?
I think so.
I don't know. What do you think? So what do we normally think of when we think leisure?
Well, yeah, the word leisure is a kind of a funny one to use because in our contemporary culture, it just means not working, taking it easy, relaxing, goofing around, you know, so leisure is not having nothing to do. And that's exactly what we think about. But the term historically has a very different meaning and has a much different component to it. And that's what's kind of interesting is digging into what it actually is all about.
So this chapter, you talk about Joseph Pieper, not Franz Pieper.
Right.
So who is Joseph Pieper?
Yeah, Joseph Pieper, and it's spelled exactly the same way as the Pieper we know in our Lutheran world. Franz Pieper is the guy who wrote the Dogmatics, or right, the 3 volumes of theology that we use for, you know, kind of, here it is. This is Christian doctrine. And everybody knows Franz Pieper. He was the president of the seminary, president of the synod, all this kind of stuff. And so now we have Joseph Pieper, and he's not related, not directly anyway. He was a Roman Catholic moral theologian from the mid-20th century. So he was doing his thing in the 50s and 60s, and as a very Thomistic scholar, wrote a bunch of stuff about virtue. That's how I encountered him. Mm-hmm. He wrote a really nice book on the 4 cardinal virtues. And then he has this penchant for writing like short little books, and often very interesting. And that's the case in this one, I think.
Yeah, so he talks a lot about leisure. You bring this into the chapter. How does Pieper talk about what leisure actually is?
Right. So Joseph Pieper wrote this little book called Leisure, the Basis of Culture. And in that, he's making a case that leisure is actually to be the foundation of culture. And frankly, when I first read this book, I thought the title was probably ironic. You know, he was like making fun of it, you know, like, I shouldn't be the leader. But no, it is the basis of culture. And it's not a wry, negative assessment of like how bad things are. All we care about is, you know, leisure. His whole point is you have to understand what leisure actually is. So he's as I mentioned, a Thomistic scholar, a Catholic moral theologian. So he knows Aristotle well, and he's very interested in going back to Aristotle. And when you go back to the ancient Greeks, you find leisure is just a completely different way of thinking about this. And that's kind of his point, that for Aristotle, leisure is not inactivity per se. Leisure is the Greek word is scholia. And we actually get the word scholar, school, from this word. Because for Aristotle, leisure is being able to contemplate, think about, reflect on, come to an understanding and appreciation of stuff. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it can be anything, but it's just thinking about stuff. And so the best word for leisure in English probably really would be contemplation. And that would be the term we would use, this the ability to stop and think. And the reason you get the connection to inactivity is because to be able to contemplate really means you've got to have the freedom to be able to stop and just kind of think about stuff instead of worrying about where your next meal is or who's trying to kill you or where you're going to sleep tonight, you know, whatever. You know, you're worried about just surviving. But yeah, leisure means you have the ability to contemplate and think about what it means to be human.
So the phrase at your leisure makes a little more sense then, when you're able to
think
have
about
the time.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
And this is where the connection came in with the idea of, you know, leisure time, doing nothing, because the people who are able to contemplate aren't the ones who are trying to work to survive or get by. And in Aristotle's day, you got the working class, pretty much as everybody, and they're just trying to get by from day to day. You know, where's the next meal coming from? You know, are we going to be able to provide and getting everything done? It's just work, 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 work to do. And so to be able to have people working for you, doing all that kind of stuff, so you can do leisure and do contemplation was like kind of special. But Aristotle didn't think that was an elitist thing. His whole argument was that those who have leisure are able to consider the things that really matter to be able to help everybody, to be able to have a better appreciation of what life is all about, what we're here for, what things matter, what things are important. And so leisure opens up that kind of thought, that kind of possibility.
I would say I probably was better at that as a child than I am as an adult because of all the responsibilities I have as an adult.
That's a good point. And this is one of the things, the insights that Pieper has. And so I'm not saying we all have to become Thomists or, you know, Pieper's right about everything, but he has a tremendously sharp insight when he's writing about the problem we have of everybody being obsessed with work. And he calls this the culture of total work, which I find to be really compelling. And he argues that and he's writing in the 50s, and he's saying everybody's working, everybody's busy and trying to get things done. And this has translated into kind of a way of life, and Americans are really good at this. We've kind of got the market cornered on this. And it's not just about working, 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 you know, but you hear stories about people not taking vacation days. Americans are notorious for not taking vacation days. Nobody else in the world does this. No. We do it all the time. And then we work while we're on vacation. We talk about working vacations. But see, and it goes more than just that inability to stop working. The deeper thing is how we start to judge everything. And we end up judging the value of things by our productivity. So how was your weekend? Oh, I got a lot done. Oh, it was a good weekend. You got stuff done. You see, you were productive. And we start to judge everything by its productivity. What'd you accomplish? What'd you get done? And this starts to trickle into everything. The academy, how many students did you graduate? You know, what was your average scores you were able to do? What are you producing? What are you getting done? And this comes into the church. You know, how many new baptisms? How many confirmations? What are you producing? What are you getting done? And so then we start to judge our lives based on our productivity. What are we accomplishing? What are we getting done? And this becomes an incredible burden on us. And this, I think, gets to the core of why leisure is so important to say, wait, 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 wait. What is the criteria of what we're here for? What's the point? And Pieper says, stop on all this work stuff. That's not what it's all about. It's about living in contemplation.
Why do we do this? We choose work, this total work culture, over leisure, especially, I mean, in our Western world, a lot of us have, we do actually have the time.
Some of us have more propensity toward that than others, right?
Yes.
Agree? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like we a lot of us have the time for leisure, and we choose not to use that time.
And that's precisely his complaint. He says, you know, here we are in the 20th century with all this technology that makes life so much easier. We've got time to be able to do other things, but what do we do instead? We just get busy and fill our time with total work, and that's his complaint. And so that's the one level. And then as you unfold this whole leisure thing, it gets more and more interesting as you go, because see, then his whole point is, so what is it to be human? And his argument is humans think, humans reason. We're not just animals. We have the ability to contemplate. And so to be fully human means use your brain, think about stuff, be reflective. And that's what it means to be human. And this then becomes a whole new way of looking at what am I here for? To get stuff done or to delight in the way the roses smell and how the garden's laid out and how my grandkids play and how fun it is just to watch them or to look at the birds at my bird feeder and just enjoy watching how they do things. Is that wrong? Is that idleness? Is that being wasteful? And people would say, not necessarily. There is something about contemplation going on there, which gets to the core of what it actually means to be human.
Yeah. And that takes a shift of culture.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. That's kind of his point. And so his argument is, if we would start to reclaim this, it would alter how we think about human living, how we value things, what we're doing, and how we prioritize even the way we use our time and how we spend our time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of shame in being like, I sat and thought all day on Saturday. And someone's like, did you actually do anything?
Well, right.
I don't know, did I? Yeah. Yeah. How is leisure, we're talking a lot about thinking, how is it like a whole person activity?
Right. And so the idea of leisure is that you're engaged in an awareness of what's going on, a kind of an active reflection on what matters and why, and just kind of being what I would argue in tune. That's kind of a big part of this. I'll add a few more components of this because it gets more interesting, as I said, as you add more layers. Part of leisure happens well in community. You don't do it alone. You have contemplation with others. You have these discussions with others. You know, the idea of a symposium, a drinking party, but you're doing it to talk. And I'll this happens in the classroom. Okay? You have the classroom experience, but it also happens sitting around the campfire with, you know, five or six guys and you're talking about stuff, you know, that matters. Mm-hmm. Talk about sports. You talk about work. Then you start talking about stuff. And it happens. That's leisure. That's what he's getting at. That's the contemplation he's getting at. That's what he means. And so it gets into the depth of what it actually means to be human and what I'm living for, living in those moments of in-tuneness and of a delight. And so then he moves into the idea of festival. So you see, festivals are this whole community-wide celebration of, hey, we're human together. We know what it means to be alive. We just delight in being part of this creation. And for Pieper, the whole idea of being in tune with yourself and with God and with those around you, that's what leisure looks like. It's being, everything's in sync. Everything's kind of in tune. And that starts to get kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay, you used a fun word, festival, which sounds like there's a connection to worship.
Yes. That's one of the big surprises when you're reading Pieper's book. He says, all of leisure comes to its fruition in worship.
You know, what?
But this is exactly the move he makes. And I remember that reading that first time, I was stunned. I thought, I can't believe he just did that. You know, it's like, wow. But then you think about it and you realize, yeah, this is right. Because see, in worship, what are we doing? We're not being productive. What do you accomplish? What do you come out with? What have you produced in worship? Nothing. Marva Dawn famously calls us a royal waste of time. She's got a book with that title. Mm-hmm. And so worship is, you're not accomplishing anything. You're just there to delight in God. And we think, well, yeah, God's feeding me. Yep. And I'm giving him praise. Yep. But I'm also with others. We're singing praises together. We're together in the liturgy. We're together in the hymns. We're together in the conversations before and after. This is part of the festival aspect. And so worship really captures beautifully contemplation is, what leisure is.
That's so different than the modern American evangelical view of worship.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it completely
It just flies in the face of that, doesn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not me and Jesus. It's not me getting my pickup for the week. It's not me getting recharged so I can get back to work. You see, this is
What I'm here to do.
That's right. I'm here to give God praise, here to do my thing.
I mean, those are all good things. We do all those things. But that's not
the point.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And see, we even take worship and kind of make it into a therapeutic thing. Ah, I need to get, and see, we do this with leisure too. I need to get pumped back up so I can get back to work. And so then we instrumentalize leisure and vacation and times off and even worship for the sake of something else. I need to be recharged so I can get back to work, be productive again. And see, that's not the point. The point is you work to be able to have leisure instead of having leisure to work.
I can hear minds blowing all over the radio waves.
We're renaming the program. The Leisure Hour.
Oh, the Leisure Hour. I feel like that would make sense, though. I mean, we're here and talking and like contemplating things.
The more you get into this, the more it makes sense. Exactly right.
New podcast coming soon. No, I'm just kidding. We need to take a break before we start making up more things. We're talking with Dr. Joel Bierman, author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play. From Concordia Publishing House, you're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
Who am I? How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with Dr. Joel Bierman, author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House, having a wonderfully contemplative discussion about leisure and what it actually means, how it connects to worship and work. So we're talking about how leisure and festivals are part of what it means to be a human. And leisure, as we're talking about it, involves some semblance of work, but it isn't work. How does that make sense?
Well, see, the problem is we tend to think of leisure as non-work. But I would contend that actually, and even Pieper gets into this a little bit, that if you're going to do a festival, you got to do some planning and some preparation and a fair amount of work. So I'll give you a concrete example. You think about your typical Thanksgiving celebration.
Oh, boy. Hives are ready. Anxiety hives.
Yeah,
okay. See, you get with the, you get the anxiety because you got to get ready for it. I'm on the other side of things. It's like, this is going to be a blast. I just love Thanksgiving. And you see, that's the kind of the classic example of leisure. It's a festival. You're with people. You're not producing anything. You're just delighting and enjoying the event, the celebration, the camaraderie, the community. That's leisure. That's what it looks like. So a Thanksgiving celebration is that. How much work goes into it? You know, the amount of man hours my wife puts into our Thanksgiving feast is incredible. She's planning for weeks, probably a month out, getting everything in order so she can feed the 20 some people who show up at our house every year for Thanksgiving. And it's great. We would have it no other way. And I have my part. She's doing her thing. There's a lot of work involved. But you see, it's not work in a sense of us such a burden. But you see, this is what I'm getting at in kind of the whole idea of the book is there's a symbiosis and a beautiful working together of work and leisure. They're not at odds. They fit together. One of the complaints I have with Pieper is I think he goes too far and he starts to trash all work. Work is antithetical. Leisure is what it's all about. God created us for contemplation. And you got scriptures that talk about, you know, I delighted to go to your house and I contemplate you, God. And so is that what we're made for? We're just made to contemplate. Or this last week, aren't we made to work? You know, aren't we here to be doing stuff and be serving in my vocation? So there seems to be a real conflict. And that, frankly, is what drove me to write the book in the first place. Because when I was doing my grad work, you would get these kind of two opposite poles. Are we made for contemplation? Or are we made for work? Which one is it? And I believe it's both under the context of what we of understanding Sabbath rightly. But that's a few weeks to come yet. We'll get to, we'll pull all the pieces together. It's kind of a fun thing. We got all these different threads and we can hopefully pull them all together in a way that makes sense.
Okay, this is not in our notes anywhere, but
that's all right.
So when, for example, creating a position description, a job description, should we be including time for leisure?
Yeah.
Maybe not use that exact word, but for contemplation.
Yeah.
In when we're trying to add up how much time a person spends
right.
in, you know, what percentage of their time is spent in various duties and responsibilities.
Right. I think absolutely.
How many of us feel guilty about like actually
sitting and thinking?
Sitting and thinking.
Especially for people who have a lot of creative wonder energy.
Yes.
Yeah, which we do a lot here.
Well, yeah, when you have, when you're creating lots of programs, content.
Right.
Yeah, you have to think.
I'm sure in your work too.
No. Well, see, this is one of the, frankly, I've got a great gig because I can do this. And it's okay because I do get to read and think and talk with other guys and contemplate, and it's a blast. But I think we should be more aware of this in all kinds of work. And well, see, it's also interesting is how the secular world picks up on this. You hear about the, you know, the high tech places that have ping pong tables, you know, and they have Zen rooms and, you know, for why? Because we want people to be recharged. Well, they're doing it for the productive because then they're more productive when they come back out. They're starting to instrumentalize it again. But the very notion of acknowledging the value of that as its own thing, absolutely right. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. I think we're just on a tangent now. I think we discovered some of that or maybe lost some of that during COVID too when all of us were separate in our houses. There was a lot of that just like casual leisure time or being together and just being able to talk about stuff that I mean, I felt that I was missing that now we're back.
And we have Teams chat now.
Yeah, that's just mostly gifts.
No, when you're face-to-face, it makes all the difference.
True.
And these spontaneous things
the
just come up.
Different. Sure.
Yeah.
It's the conversations that just happen in the hallway or in the cafeteria.
You haven't seen our team chats.
They're hilarious.
They're pretty similar to hallway conversations.
They are.
I can believe that.
With lots of gifts. Yeah. Yeah. So also, I'm taking a hard left here because there's something else in this chapter that I think is really important for us to talk about, and that is sloth or... however you're going to say it, acedia, acadia.
You got it. That's how I would say it.
I've heard it several ways.
Yeah.
What is sloth? What is it, first of all, and how is that related to leisure?
This starts to sharpen things even better. And so we're trying to get our mind around this idea of leisure, this idea of scholia, this idea of contemplation, living in tune, living in a festival kind of attitude. Well, the ancient Greeks recognized that if you get something right, that's a virtue. So you have the virtue of pursuing leisure. That's a good thing. Well, what's the antithesis of it? Well, the antithesis is acedia. And acedia comes from the Greek word acadus. And cadus means to care. And so you put the alpha privative in front, it means you don't give a rip. And so acedia is not caring. not invested. And we think, well, that's apathy. No, apathy is a lack of feeling. Apatheia means you don't have a feeling, just no feeling. And so acedia means you just don't give a rip. You're not tuned in. And this gets translated as sloth. Now, it's so ironic because we think of sloth as laziness, inactivity. And so the opposite of sloth is go get something done. But actually, it's not that way. The opposite of sloth is contemplation, being in tune, being aware, doing stuff. In the Middle Ages, the monks and the spiritual people would be very concerned about the vice or the sin of acedia, which is when you just don't care anymore. And people experience this. I don't feel like going to church. I don't want to read my Bible. I don't want to pray. That's acedia. It's just not there. It's not happening. And how ironic it is also then that this acedia, I would say, is manifest anytime that we're not living in tune the way we should, not taking the time to be where we need to be, thinking about God, praying, offering our prayers, our personal prayers, our going to church, are being in tune with other people, celebrating festivals, I'd rather not. That's all part of acedia. And then what's weird though then is that in the contemporary world, we have people who are busy, 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 busy because they don't want to stop and think about why do I exist? What's the meaning of life? What's my purpose in life? Why am I here? Because they don't have answers for those things. And those questions scare the daylights out of them. And that's the heart of contemplation, is asking those kinds of questions. And so what do we do today? We get busy, 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 so we don't have time for contemplation because we don't want it. And so in a sense, people who are busy are often guilty of the sin of acedia, of sloth, which is like, no, they're busy. They're not slothful. Actually, they are, because they're not doing what they should be doing. They're using it as an avoidance from what they should be doing because they don't want the contemplation. Yeah. And so you can have people who are busy and they're totally guilty of acedia.
Mm-hmm. Where does overthinking fit into this?
Nowhere. Oh, no.
You can't overthink it. No, I mean, this is part of, I would argue, the whole, there are things you need to do. You have a vocation and, I'm doing contemplation, leave me alone. Yeah, you got to fulfill your responsibilities. And that's part of this tension of getting things right. But the wonder of leisure and getting it right is just kind of, whoa, this opens a whole new way. And we're not talking about the leisure of make sure you rest on Sunday, make sure you have time for yourself. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is make sure that you're living in tune, aware, conscious of who God is, who you are, what it means to be in tune.
Don't bother me. I'm contemplating my existence.
Precisely. Best by talking with others. That's why you go to church. That's why you pray. That's why you have fellowship. You hang out, because that's where leisure happens.
Yeah. Are there other words? I mean, leisure is certainly the word that we use for this. Are there other words that have been used throughout history to describe this concept that maybe we've overlooked?
Yeah, well, that's where you get the scholia is Greek term for it. And that's where it comes into scholar or, and contemplation is probably the word I would use that comes closest to getting it. And then you got the festival thing. But see, that's where we think festival, contemplation, leisure, what? They don't go together, but they do. They do. That's the whole point.
We just don't understand them that way.
That's right. We don't understand them that way. And the core here is not just trying to revive a term or revive some stupid Aristotelian idea about you better have some leisure in your life. No, the bigger point is, what does it mean to be human? And Aristotle's insight is humans are uniquely created by God, we would say, obviously, as Christians, are uniquely situated with the ability to think and to contemplate and reflect. That's what makes us human. We should be doing that. Mm-hmm. We should be doing that.
Where do aesthetics fit into this? When we think about stuff, when we're contemplating things, a lot of times, I mean, that might be contemplating the things that are right in front of us.
Yeah.
So where does the aesthetics or beauty, those kinds of things play into this?
It's such a cool thing.
I love this part.
Yeah, aesthetics. And that's just a huge part in all of this discussion. And it's going to come in later more as we work our way into this. But the whole idea of aesthetics is the sense of beauty, the awareness of the wonder in things, and an appreciation for it. So beauty isn't just about, there's a beautiful person or a beautiful, painting. But aesthetics gets into an awareness of the way that things are put together that causes this sense of pleasure and delight. And delight is a key idea here. And contemplation enables that.
Okay, what are we looking forward to in chapter 5?
I don't remember.
We'll talk about that next week.
All right.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman, author of Day 7 for Work, Rest, or Play from Concordia Publishing House. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.